Today we will be reading from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient, love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends, but as for prophecies, they will come to an end. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will come to an end. For we know only in part, and we prophesy only in part. But when the complete comes, the partial will come to an end. When I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became an adult, I put an end to childish ways. For now we see in a mirror, dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. And now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. Here ends the reading.
When I mention the name Scrooge, what pops into your mind? Ebenezer, okay, we can get his first name, Ebenezer Scrooge. What about the man? A miser. Shame on you, Peggy. I'm going to tell. Okay, we're not going to make associations with anyone else we know. Let's just talk about Scrooge. You need to speak a little louder, too. Her volume was good. He was a miser. What else about the man? What do you know from the story? Okay, what? Miserable, lonely, selfish.
He got to see his life before how he was acting.
Say that again?
He got to see how he was acting.
Right. He had a mirror held up to his face, didn't
right.
he? He was greedy. He was cruel. He didn't care who he hurt to collect his money. And he lived this, as you say, very miserly life. He had all this money and he dressed in rags. His house was cold. He ate gruel and broth because he didn't want to spend his money. He wanted to look at it in these piles on a table. And then, as we know from the story, he has his midnight experience where he is visited by the ghosts of Christmas past, of present, and of the future. And a mirror is held up to his face, and Scrooge does not like what he sees. He realizes at that point that his life is empty. He has gold, but he has no friends. He has no one to mourn him when he dies. He has no one to spend Christmas Day with him. No one to take care of him when he is sick. He has no love. You know, it's funny how we can walk through the motions of life with a big gaping hole in us and not know it. In the summer of 2000, I spent some weeks in New Jersey finishing up my coursework for my Doctor of Ministry degree. And there was a pastor there who preached the evening worship services the last week that we were there. His name was Tom Toole, and he was the pastor of Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City. I believe he's still there, but I'm not sure. But I remember in one of his sermons, he was talking about a Sunday morning experience he had in the church there in New York, where in the service had just started, but in walks this gorgeous supermodel. And she sits down in the pew near the front. Now, Tom swore that he wasn't distracted by her beauty, but I think he protested just a little too much. At any rate, when the service was over, she appeared very distraught, and she asked if she could speak with the pastor. So he took her to his office, and he sat down, and she sat down, and then she began to sob uncontrollably. Now, he said here he was in his office with this gorgeous woman crying her eyes out, and he wasn't sure whether to give her a hug or to run away in the other direction. Luckily, wisdom won out, and he sat down, and he waited. And as her crying began to abate, she told him her story. She was very successful, as he already knew. She made paychecks for a day's work in front of the camera that he couldn't even imagine. She had money, notoriety, a handsome boyfriend, although she said that was really a relationship of convenience. But she had come to realize that everything she had was temporary. As beautiful as she was, she knew that even she was subject to the forces of aging, and that her career and her money and her fame would come to an end. She had nothing that would endure. See, Tom had preached that morning on the parable of the prodigal son, and it was not until she was sitting in that sanctuary, in that pew, that she realized she was lost. She had so much, but what she desperately lacked was love. The unconditional love of God that doesn't fade with age or popularity. She was missing the unconditional love of family and friends who love you when you have bedhead, no makeup, and morning breath. You know, if you look in the dictionary and you look up the word prodigal, you will find that it is defined as extravagant. And we recognize that the story got its name from the son who wasted his resources in extravagant living. But more importantly, and especially for this young woman that was sitting in Tom's office, was the extravagant love of God. A love that says you can never wander so far away that the Lord isn't waiting with open arms for your return. You can never get so lost that the love of God cannot or will not find you. She had it all by the world's standards, but the gifts turned pale and withered in the absence of love. I'm reminded of a movie that further illustrates this point. Maybe you've seen it. It's called The Family Man. If you have, you'll remember, and if you haven't, you'll hear a little piece of it, and maybe then you'll go see it. Or rent it. It's on video. In this movie, the lead character is played by Nicolas Cage. And he made a choice very early in his adult life between love and career. He chose career. And it paid off for him quite well. He became this fierce and mighty corporate wizard. He was head of a huge company that bought out smaller companies and dismantled them and sold them. He was feared and admired by his colleagues. He drove a very expensive sports car. He had a high-rise penthouse with a magnificent view of Manhattan laid out before him. He had a closet full of Armani suits and silk ties and Italian shoes. He had all the money he could ever spend and beautiful women at his disposal to enjoy his wealth with him. This guy was set in every sense of the word. Then on Christmas Eve, he has an unlikely exchange in a convenience store with what I can only characterize as an angel or messenger of God. In conversation with this rather earthy angel, he claims that he has everything in life that he could ever need. With an impish grin, the angel says something like, "We'll see about that." And then he goes on his way. On Christmas morning, our man wakes up in someone else's life. Well, really, it's his life, but it's a different one from the one he had chosen. This was the life he would have had if he had chosen love over career. Now, at first, he's confused, terrified, and revolted. But then, it begins to grow on him. And then he doesn't want to leave. For in this life, he has a beautiful wife who adores him and has been by his side for 13 years. He has healthy, happy children who teach him anew the joy of life and the world around you. He has friends who accept him for who he is and love him, warts and all. He's gone from wealthy, powerful executive to a tire salesman in his father-in-law's store. He's gone from Armani and silk to poly cotton blends and Wrangler blue jeans. Now, admittedly, he misses some of the perks of the other life a little bit, but when push comes to shove, he wants the family and the friends and the mortgage and the in-laws. If I am a Wall Street executive with a Porsche sports car, if I am Kate Moss or Tyra Banks and am considered the most beautiful in the world, if I'm vice president in my division, best vocalist, head cheerleader, but have no love in me, I am a waste of human energy. If I wear Armani, Versace, Hilfiger, Abercrombie & Fitch, Ralph Lauren, if I can play the trumpet better than Louis Armstrong and the guitar better than Jimi Hendrix, build bridges and skyscrapers and rolling in dough, but I don't have the love of God in me, then I am a sack of bones and skin sucking up precious air. You see, the family man came to understand that with love as the constant in his life, he could live on less than one-tenth of the money he had before and be 10 times happier. In our reading from the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, Paul tells us one side of the story of what life is like when you are devoid of love. And then, in the last verse, he tells us the other. Faith, hope, love, abide. These three. And the greatest of these is love. In the family man, our guy began to discover what it was possible, what life would be like with love. And so have others. I want to tell you about Sarah. When she was appointed to her first church in the United Methodist system, she was a little disheartened by the bishop's selection for her. She was sent to a congregation with an aging building in an aging neighborhood, and out of the 50 or so that attended worship on a Sunday morning, 70% were widowed women, 65 or older. Upon first glance, Sarah didn't think she had much to work with, and the career-driven folks would probably have agreed with her. Yet as Sarah came to know the people of her church, she sensed that while there were some realities to face regarding the physical limitations of age, she had a congregation full of love and an eagerness to do more. They shouldn't know what. One day, Sarah was staring out her office window around 3:30, and she noticed this considerable stream of school children that walked past the church on their way home. She had an idea. She took it to her little old ladies. She asked them if they would come a couple of days a week, make some peanut butter sandwiches. That's about it. Maybe set out some juice to go with them. Well, they did. One of the ladies who played the piano started playing some children's songs, and they invited the children in for an afternoon snack. What started as just a little love and some peanut butter sandwiches grew to an extensive ministry to the children in the community, including tutoring and family counseling. The pews got fuller, the color more diverse, and the love grew. And through it, the wondrous works of God were done. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I am a Wall Street wizard or captain of the football team, but have not love, then I am wasting my time and energy. But with just a little bit of love, peanut butter sandwiches grow into life-changing ministries. With a little love, miracles happen through my meager gifts, and I am never the same again. Last week, we talked about how each person breathing and walking on this planet is bestowed with God's breath of life, and how each one is given gifts and talents and abilities. And no matter your gifts, great or small, with a little love, they can become an opportunity to participate in the wondrous works of God. Now, what do the three folks in our sermon today have in common? Scrooge, the model, the family man. They had a certain hunger and an emptiness. And they didn't realize that the only thing that would really fill them was love. To live a full, happy, and faithful life, all you need is a willingness to let God work in you and through you. All you need is faith, hope, and love, these three, for they are what truly lasts. No, wait, I take that back. All you really need is love. The rest will fall into place. All you need is love. Where have I heard those words before?